about the report that you have members that you haven't had a chance to advance. Councillor Kane.
Quite a few, do you want me to do them separately while we're... First one's on page 37, the digital inclusion network. Across the borough to improve digital capacity in the highest risk areas. Says that the project's been paused due to resource implications. Can we get some timescales on that?
Yes, yeah, please do self check. So the resource has been put in place over summer that actually started 2 weeks ago. So we're aiming to get that project completed by September 2024.
Brilliant, thank you. My next one is page 40. KPI 5. So are we on target for that? For the non-decent council general painting, because we seem to be way off target.
Peter, have you got an answer?
Yeah, certainly. So there was contractor failure last year. We subsequently appointed new contractor to work on kitchens and bathrooms, and that contract's going really well. And so I expect there'll be some catch-up on decency this year. And we also need to profile going forward when full decency will be achieved as well. So that'll be taking place as part of the in the next couple of months.
So when will we get an update? Will that be the next?
Yeah, happy to do that. Yeah, we need to map out the route to 100% decency as part of our preparation for regulation. So something we're mindful of and aware of. As I mentioned, has been a bit of a drop because of the programme since, but they're back up and running again now, working well.
Thank you. Two more, if I may, Chair. So page 48, just there about the demands in job titles, but none of those seem to hit the ones we're struggling to recruit. So I just wonder what the issue is with us recruiting while we're struggling to recruit in some of our roles that we need.
Yes, please. So part of the effective and efficient board recruitment and retention is an ongoing project that's been looked at. That I'm not personally part of that, but again, I know that they're looking at kind of what we're doing in terms of recruitment, in terms of exploring different avenues, in terms of looking how we're promoting adverts through obviously our website as well, the social media channels. But again, if you want any further information, then I'm sure that that board in particular that are managing that project can provide further information.
I think it'd be useful because the top skills in demand and the top titles in demand are not really areas that we're looking to recruit from. So we're not in a high demand area that we're trying to recruit. So we should be finding it easier to recruit. So there must be some other reason. So I suppose it's known what that reason is, why we're struggling to recruit. So I think some more details on that would be helpful at some point. And then my final one, Chair, if I may, is the crime. So crime's going up in the last year.
Which page is this?
It's page 51. So in the last year, crime seems to have gone up in almost every area. I just wonder what the why we think that is.
Yes, please. I'm trying to report it. I think Gareth dropped off the call now. Obviously, we have the annual report that comes to this committee in September or November. In terms of the community safety partnership, but again, if you want any interim information as to why those figures are going up, then obviously you can speak to the community safety manager and the head of service for aid services, which is Gareth, as to some more information as to why and what we're doing with the inspector as well at the front in relation to that.
Yes, please. Charles?
Just a couple, please, and maybe I'll just not understand this. The Charnwood Insight Survey, so what percentages? Am I assuming that the remainders of the 100% were just not answered? Because I'm looking at the climate change, for instance, over all those percentages up, it comes to 81.6%. Could the further 18.4% of those people not reply or how do we get to those figures?
Sorry, through Sally. So that survey itself is actually done for by Leicestershire County Council. So again, in terms of the reporting metrics, again, can get some information as to the missing.
Just interested in those questions.
Is it because they just decide not to answer because they're not mandatory questions versus is there another category which there isn't that comes out in the public report for the insight survey?
Okay. And then just one more, if I can. Sundry debtors. I mean, this looks great. There's just one sort of fly in the ointment, which is rechargeable repairs, where we only managed to collect 54% of the fees. I'm just wondering, how do we go about that? Are they, do we, can we chase them? Are we likely to get those back? Do we take deposits before we did repairs? I'm not sure how it works. So just a bit of background on that.
Does somebody got an answer for that? Peter?
To provide some insight, a significant proportion of the rechargeable repairs relate to repairs which are identified after the tenancy has ended. So typically tenants that leave properties in poor condition with high repair costs tend not to be good prospects for recovery. It's harder to recover the debt when the tenancy has ended. The debts are recovered through our central payments team or recovery team, when all of the processes are exhausted, then typically go through to write off. But the point I'm making is these are quite difficult debts to recover due to the nature of them.
Okay, thank you. Right,
Councillor
Snell.
Just a couple of small items. Page 31. This is Safer Charnwood. And it's saying the end of the year data of Charnwood Community Safety Partnership sees the following reductions. And it gives you all crime and injury and everything like that. But it doesn't give you any indication of what we've actually got a reduction in. So, take for instance, I was thinking of shoplifting. It's not on there. When can we look at an overall picture of Safer Charnwood, so we know the areas where we are not actually delivering.
Through self-chair, sorry, what page is that, Councillor Snell?
Page 31.
31.
I think it's page 8 on the other numbers.
Oh, sorry, 8 on the bottom.
So through self-chair, again, in terms of those four figures, again, it comes through the full CSP report that comes to this committee in November. Yeah. But again, if there's any data that you feel is missing that you want in the interim, that's public data. I'm sure the community safety manager, yeah, Tim McKay, will be happy to supply that information.
It seems a bit misleading if we just actually put the reductions and we don't actually look at the areas where we need to improve as well.
Okay, you have one more question?
I did, yeah. Could officers, through you, Madam Chairman, just remind me where the priority areas are, the priority neighbourhoods in Charnwood?
Did we get an answer for that, Vicky?
So through yourself, Chair, I'm aware of some, because as you know, Councillor Sutton, I'm used to working in that area of the council, but again, in terms of giving you full details, again, you can get a written response to Coos Warwick, Wales State, Bell Foundry, to name a couple, but again, can you provide the full list?
Thank you.
And could I just say the reason for it is that I recall when I was looking after that, we did have a priority neighbourhood in Syston. But I notice all the areas where we're doing work are in Loughborough. So it would be nice just to know what we're doing for the where the areas are, and if there is still one in Syston, what we're doing for the people of Syston.
Okay, thank you for that comment. Right, if we can move on now, are we happy to note the report? Everybody happy?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So we can move on to item 7 now, please.
Yes, Chair.
Thank you very much for those of you who intended to answer the questions.
So thank you, Chair. So item 7 is the annual performance report. So again, this is an item that's always on the fourth plan. It's kind of our kind of headline version of some of the goals that have been achieved throughout the year. Obviously, against the four corporate themes, As you can see, it's broken down into a structured way in terms of introduction from the Chief Executive. It goes into some feedback and comments directly from some of our customers. It then has some facts and figures which we collate from different service areas in terms of some of those headlines. And then it obviously has the quarter four information which we've just reviewed as part of the quarter four reporting. What is nice to say about this, and you'll see as well, that in terms of Appendix B, there's also a four-year summary because we're at the end of the four-year corporate strategy cycle, 2020 to 2024. We had some support from our T-level students, that you may be aware of, that we've got from the college at the moment in terms of creating these documents as well, which is great to see. So again, it's really providing a headline in terms of some of those key achievements throughout the 4 years and the four-year overview, but obviously some of the highlights as well as part of the annual report for 2023-24.
Thank you. Have we any questions?
Sorry, Chair, one thing I wanted to mention, so I know this was a question that also came up last year when we were talking about the annual report. We have a response plan in place in terms of how we're going to communicate this, in terms of once it's hopefully approved this evening. So that includes, we've got 20,000 subscribers in terms of our email alert subscribers. We're obviously planning to flag this on social media through our various channels as well, providing hard copies to some of our housing colleagues who work in customer engagement specifically. Obviously, asking some of our teams to share with their community stakeholders, obviously sharing through staff and via internal channels, and also we've asked our corporate leadership team to flag with any of their stakeholders as well. We're trying to spread it as far and wide as possible, but again, if you feel there's any gaps, be very interested to hear feedback in terms of making sure that we can promote the good work that the council are doing.
Thank you for that. Any questions or comments or observations?
Just a quick one, Chair. KO4, percentage of household waste sent for recycling. I mean, I know this is a really difficult thing, but we never seem to get it. We never seem to hit the target. Are there any plans or any questions of how we're going to get a bit closer to actually achieving that target?
Unfortunately,
Matt's
just left.
Yeah, sorry.
I think he must have known
by that.
I think this is perennially difficult. I think it's one we've periodically thought about revisiting it, and then we've always decided to leave it as a stretch target. I think that's going back actually a very large number of years. I think, to be honest, for me, the answer is to probably wait until we're now going to get a new set of targets when the Environment Act starts kicking in with things like food waste, so we can have a food waste collection. So all those things, I think, will actually change the targets and the metrics, and it may be highly likely, I think, that we'll get a new set of national metrics that we'll need to deliver against as part of the information and the extent of producer responsibility in the active rules. So I think, you know, we could indeed look at it. I think we're obviously, over time, I think the way packaging has changed and the fact that producers have reduced the level of packaging they use has actually made that target go further away, even as our performance hasn't necessarily deteriorated. It's probably improved, but the fact that producers have changed their actions have made those numbers differ. But I think, from my personally, I think when we start introducing food waste and various other things, I think we probably need to just review those metrics to the extent the government doesn't tell us what those metrics are going to be in any event.
Any other questions on? Yes.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm looking at page, I think it's 87, it's a bit difficult to read, but KI20, percentage of customers not proceeding past stage one of the corporate complaint process. And then I looked at the Housing Management Advisory Board meeting, which is being held on the 10th of July, and it's talking about complaints responded to within timescale stage one, 52.1%. Does that have some bearing on what the actual outcome of the overall target is on that? Because it seems that through stage one, we're only in the, I guess that's through the housing, we're only responding to 52% in the time scale of stage one complaints.
Peter, did you want to come in there? I think you had your hands up.
That's correct. That's the overall figure for 23-24. We did introduce three additional resident liaison officers because we were mindful of this need to improve complaints response times. So those resources were introduced just after Christmas, actually, and that led pretty much immediately to a spike upwards of performance improvement in terms of complaints response times, which has gone up to around 80% now. That's been sustained pretty much until now, really. So unfortunately, it wasn't enough to pull up the overall score for 23-24, but it has added to a significant performance improvement in terms of stage one complaints response times. And that'll be detailed as well in the complaints handling report, which will be brought forward to Calgary over the next couple of weeks or so. In respect of, I guess, whether or not it impacts, particularly on whether complaints are escalated up to stage two or not, which I think was what was being considered. I think a small number of complaints I think are escalated, perhaps because they've not been responded to, but generally it's because people are dissatisfied with some other aspect of the complaint response or generally support or something that's not happened subsequently as well. So rather than actually there being perhaps a delay in terms of responding to the stage one, that's my view.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or observations, or are we happy to amend the report? Are we happy to referend? Yeah. Lovely. So, item 8.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you much. Item 8, revenue monitoring position. Thank you. So Neil, have you got anything to add into the report to highlight?
Not really, just one of the boss kind of in the highlights in the report already. So it's our outturn report as at 31st March is subject still to audit, so the statements of accounts are still being audited, but it does reflect the position that we find ourselves in 31st of March based on the year end process that we've gone through.
Okay, thank you. Any
Can I just add just an important context here? So there are various variances which we have highlighted, I think, just in terms of understanding the total quality of council spending here. So the general fund, you actually spend over £30 million in a year, and the HRA is over £20 million in a year. So although some of the variances you might think that looks relatively large, actually in the context of the overall flow of money that's coming through the council, I wouldn't say they were insignificant or important, but I think understanding that whole context of the amount of money that does flow through the council is important to recognise.
Okay, that's okay.
Just on paragraph 44 on page 14, I think it is. Just about the voids there, so just at the end of March, 480 voids. Minus the 130 that are unsheltered, minus the 44 that we're using, so it leaves us with 292 properties that we should be letting, but we're not. Do we know how much has been improved? Because this was the end of March, wasn't it? So we're losing huge amounts of income from this, not only in rental, but also in council tax as well.
Question about voids is probably the big question, I think.
Yeah, I don't think I can provide a further update in respect of the current position on the financials at this point. We're happy to circulate something separately, but I'd expect the void loss to be broadly the same, given that whilst we've reduced some numbers, I don't think it has a significant impact on the overall cost, I don't think.
Councillor
Corrilesi? Yes, so just a few points of clarity, really. What's a persistent organic pollutant? Page 7.
So Matt's gone. So Matt will be the person to ask for these. I think it's lots to do with upholstery, so armchairs, so the what's the firm, the sort of stuffing, you know, whatever's the sort
it's
of
the
foam.
Beads, isn't it? Plasticky beads within.
Plasticky beads. So all those things that come in a lot of upholstery. That's where that issue arises from. So we had to change halfway through and separate those out and deal with those separately. So it's basically settings and stuff.
Okay, cool. And then another thing, pull that up. So again, we come back to section 106. I noticed that we've had a lot of money come in. So we've still got, it's 324,000. Is there a particular sort of reason for that? Sort of versus last year, where we were at 542 to now 866.
So is this still, is this the revenue and...
Sorry, this is page 11, under, we've got table under paragraph 30. So it looks like we've had received 324,000.
Yeah, so that's a reserve. Mm-hmm. So that's basically section 106 money we received and waiting for us to disperse it. So obviously it's not our money, so we can keep it in reserve. So in that year, there's a net, we've had 324,000 in more than we've spent, basically, is what that says.
Right.
So okay. The section 106 balance is
still waiting there to be spent.
Yeah, that's the simple answer, yeah.
Okay, all right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Councillor Charles?
Thanks. Just a quick peak question. Again, page 14 states that 130 properties are containing sheltered accommodation for tenants who are under occupation. And it says here these are unlikely ever to be let. Really, what are we doing to do with these? Do we have a plan? Are they, sitting there? Just what are we going to do with them?
Through you, Chair, yeah, so you might recall we brought forward a sheltered accommodation strategy framework a few months or so ago. One of the actions is to consider options for all of the courts and to bring those options forward later this year. So we've got a tender out for some consultancy support in order to support us with that piece of work at the moment. So it's an expectation that later this year a cabinet report will be brought forward, which of course could be scrutinised. Setting out various options for the schemes.
Can I just add to that? So if we're going out to consultants, they'll obviously come back with advice about what to do, but have we got any capital funding to do what they tell us to do? Otherwise it's a bit of a waste of resources.
Yeah, so part yes, because we've got £17 million sat in the HR rank, and we've also received previous advice from Savills UK that there was significant borrowing headroom as well. So one of the questions is this kind of starting point around one, how much do we need? And then, and that's the first part of the consultancy work that we're looking at. So we've commissioned a kind of a study in relation to how much accommodation we need, and then we'll need to look at the options around for the various sites. So there's a bit more to it than that. It's out of the shared accommodation strategy framework, but the first part is how much do we need? I mean, there are various options, potentially could be receipts gained from sites, which then you could use to reinvest in other accommodation elsewhere. So I think there's some working through to do.
One more if I may. Page 11, 34, the Housing Financing Fund and the loans that we have currently. I'm assuming that's a varying amount of loans. Are they at fixed interest rates or are they at floating interest rates?
They are fixed. So each, the loans are profiles. So the first one is actually due to be repaid this year. That's £1 million. So Peter alluded to the current reserve in the housing revenue account, we will pay that off because at the moment the interest rates, obviously the prevailing interest rates are above those that we applied when we took those loans out. So those loans are, I think, from about 2012, 2013. So the interest rates, the prevailing interest rates then were around about 2-2.5%, which felt historically low at that time. Obviously they then fell subsequently. So I think our strategy over the next 4 to 5 years will be basically to pay off the loans as they fall due, and the amounts are, so it's £1 million is coming by this financial year, then I think we've got about 2 or 3 years of £2 million, and it sort of ramp up over time. So I think based on where we are with interest rates in the next 2 or 3 years, we would probably pay those off. Going forward, we may want to roll those over or think about long-term financing to do the things that sort of just described around our schemes, etc. As Pete mentions, there is quite a bit of borrowing headroom, so there is a sort of a treasury management aspect of it, but the next year or so I think we'll just pay off the relatively small balances, but they are all fixed and there is a schedule of those and they're all fixed at about sort of based on about 2-2.5%, which was the interest rate back in the day.
Thank you.
I've just got three more on this paper. So yeah. Paragraph 46 on page 14, the debt of former tenants has gone up. So what are we doing to reclaim that money back?
Is a former tenant arrears? Chair, I'll respond.
Yes, please, Peter.
Yeah, thank you. There's a dedicated former tenant arrears officer in place whose job, in addition to looking after the character rents, is to chase that debt. But as I mentioned earlier, it's always easy to recover a debt from a current tenant than it is a former tenant because and probably say that you know our current tenant rent arrears collection performance is really good. But it's a lot harder to recover these debts because they've gone from the property. For various different reasons.
Okay. Can someone explain paragraph 47 for me? What's Lothbury property? What's that?
I think that might be a typo, actually.
I think it's the Lothbury property fund, isn't it?
It should be. It's not part of the HRA, then, is it? I think that's a typo, unfortunately.
No, that's the provision we've made relating to the Lothbury issue.
Yes.
47. So the HRAs took a share.
Right. Yes, sorry.
Yeah, I thought it was a typo from it.
Apologies, yes.
Sorry.
I'm an idiot here.
So can someone still explain it, please?
So one of the... We took out some investments in property funds a number of years ago, and what's happened, so property funds have struggled in recent years as the rates on money markets have gone up. What happened with Lothbury was that some of the major investors decided that they were, it's all relatively recent, so they decided they would essentially force the closure of a fund. So what that means is the assets are going to be sold and the proceeds are going to be returned to us, so our share of the fund, but there is a loss based on the original purchase price. So we were adopting a position of wanting to have to maintain our interest in property on the basis that the valuation of the fund will increase, but some of the major investors forced a closure on it, so we now understood we will take a loss, so therefore we needed to have a provision against that loss.
So we've lost $303,000 in that fund?
We've
had to write that off, we've lost that money.
We've had to write that off, yes.
That's not good, is it?
No, but this will come, there's a slightly longer explanation coming in the Treasury Management Outturn, which will go to Audit Committee. I think the key thing that I would say on this is that we have to look at all our investment performance in the round. So actually, when we look at our investment performance in the year, we're well above budget, and that's a function of the interest rates where they are, and the strong performance in money market funds. What the other side of that is the property funds are being relatively poorly performing because of the way those investments are less attractive given the yields on other money. So it is a bit unfortunate that actually these investors forced the closure of this. So we'd still retain some other interest in another property fund. So we took out sort of $2.5 million in each of these funds, probably going back 7 or 8 years, until recently the returns on those were above what we get on money market, and we do think that will reverse because that's the sort of professional advice we've had and the sort of conversation we've had with our treasury advisors. But once the issue gets crystallised, as it has done, we have no choice other than to sort of account for loss. So it is rather unfortunate. But the other side of this is, in this particular year, our treasury management is all very strong. Our investment returns, even allowing for these provisions, is overall well above budget. So it swings and roundabouts. I think, you know, going forward, we've sort of, you know, made these decisions and try to keep a balanced portfolio with relatively low risk, but nonetheless, in this case, obviously it did work out well, but actually, if you offered us this year before, offered us this position before the start of the year, when we were well ahead of the budget, having accounted for that, we'd probably have taken that situation.
So did you just say we've still got some other property funds?
Yes, we have, which they're still active.
And so we're looking closely at them in case they do go the same way?
Yeah, we do look, so we get regular reports from each of those. So this particular fund, our treasury advisors said, are you aware of this? And we were getting letters, but are you aware of this situation? So we were monitoring it for a number of months, but we were hoping to keep our investment in the fund because we were going to continue it, and then there was going to be a merger. But for various reasons, neither of those things happened, and we went through quite a lot due diligence and discussions about that, and was that the best way forward? Unfortunately, ultimately, the major investors in the fund, holding a significant proportion, I think there was a tall tale of them, concluded that they would rather not continue investing in the property fund, and they would just basically want all their money back. That was such an amount that made the sort of remaining part of the fund unviable. So that's where we are. But yeah, we do look at these, and part of what we're going to do, I think, is think about the overall investment strategy going forward. And there's a question of council, I think, about how we're going to make the council charge about how we deal with that in the scenario of falling interest rates over the next sort of 18 months or so.
Okay. I've just got one final question, if I may, about we've overspent on repairs, but we've still got a huge backlog of repairs on void. So just trying to work out how that works out. We're overspending, but we've still got like a huge backlog.
Peter?
Yeah, certainly. Repairs materials costs have increased significantly. We re-procured the contract as well last year. The repairs materials budgets haven't been increased, I think, since 2019, pre-pandemic. So in the new budget, the budget's been increased by $400,000 on the materials prices. So there has been some inflationary increase that's affected that budget. Same on the void side as well. I'm still anticipating high repairs costs because of all the various pressures on the repairs service. I expect costs to be high this year as well because of the really high level of demand.
Okay. Okay, any other questions on this item?
Just one, and I think I'm possibly going to hark back to something Councillor Hall's mentioned about the employee costs again, looking at the temp employment, particularly in planning. I mean, it's over £1 million. And I know we've sort of looked at this many times and haven't been able to solve this. Are we any further with any solution to this or any different ideas about how potentially we could solve this situation? Because that's just going up and up, isn't it?
So, it's an ongoing problem. So what we've done is looked at golden sort of market supplements and golden hellos, which are not ideal, and we're essentially just putting a plaster on the whole thing. So we've looked at that. The next thing is something more fundamental, which is to have the pay and grading, which we are going to do. That has a number of challenges with it, so that is the next thing we're going to look at. I think, to be fair, as Councillor Ashcroft mentioned, we will never, in the short term, get away from the fact that we will need to use agency. I think endemic, and then maybe Richard Bennett would probably have a better view, but I think endemic within those professions and the way planning works, I think there's now many people who rather than being people between job and do agency work, now do agency work as a matter of choice and lifestyle, and that's how they do it. So I think we have to accept that agency costs will continue. I think if you spoke to Richard, we have got some jobs out for advert where we have done some things to make them more attractive, and I think there are a couple of people who are currently agency workers who are interested in applying permanently, which will be great. But so you know, we are doing stuff. I think when we get pay and grading, that hopefully might come forward in due course. But I'd say that's, it's very difficult to sort of just give planners a lot more money without considering the rest of the staff. So you can imagine that's quite challenging. But those things are coming forward. Agency costs within planning, though, I think is going to be an issue for the foreseeable future. So maybe it's a question of thinking about how we budget for it rather as much as anything else.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions before we move on? Are we happy to recommend? Yeah. Thank you. So, item 9, capital monitoring report. So, Neil, anything you would like to add or to highlight the report?
Nothing really. What's obviously in the report is pretty much the same story, except for the general fund of HRA. So, this year, as at March, still subject to audit. So, it's presented as it is.
Thank you. Any questions?
There is a massive amount of slippage in the capital outturn, as soon as 22 million. I know there's reasons for that, but sitting here with my sort of residence hat on, I'm sort of thinking, you know, where are we going to get this? You know, am I being shortchanged? You know, there's a lot of money in there, a lot of schemes that. There's any way of moving that forward. Look at that figure, it just seems to get bigger every year. I also have a concern on item 11, where obviously we've got a grant there that is potentially, we may need to hand back if we don't use it. I just one of the questions I'm wondering is the time, what the timeline is on that grant, because obviously we don't want to be handing the money back and paying interest on it if that's possible.
Thank you. What's
this
so slippage in the grant?
Do you want to answer the slippage?
Sure. Do I want to answer the slippage?
What do you mean to answer it?
Well, there's a couple of things. So there are some very large items. So enterprise zone forward funding and regeneration, which we have in the plan, which are, let's maybe explain before, placeholders, which are to pick up opportunistic ways of spending that money. So the enterprise money will be dependent on those enterprise owner sites coming forward with schemes which we would then choose to forward fund in due course. So that's also slightly confused necessarily, but a lot of the process was based around the LEP, which has now ceased to exist, so we've got to put some overall between the sort of capital city and the districts. We need a new organisation to take that forward. But there's about 9 million there and 5 million in the regeneration fund, which was to, again, potentially purchase key sites that maybe become available in the town centre. Another 5 million is a pure place marker. For those amounts, that's the theory was that we would, if such a thing came forward, we would borrow to finance those amounts. So there's nothing, so for those particular items, it's not that having those in there is not preventing those undertaking capital schemes with our own resources. So that's in there, it's a sort of a debt funded place markers. The rest of it, we're having a hard look at our internal processes, because I think it's one of the issues we've got is that we've got things in this scheme which we would like to do, but in reality, because of resources or other factors, we're not necessarily geared up to do immediately. So we've got an idea that we would like to upgrade children's play area or etc., but we haven't actually historically had specific plans to do that, so apart from we want to do it and there's will to do it and there's a need, but actually, have we got plans in place? Have we done the procurement? Have we got a contract to do nowhere near the starting site? And the answer is we don't. And then what happens then is, it's sometimes a part of these things are quite challenging to deliver. So what we're going to do going forward is to actually change the reporting and the presentation. So we're going to have something called the live schemes are going to be a much more restricted. So things on that part of it will be things where we should have the project management in place, etc. Things will go wrong and there will be slippage on those, but we'll be able to answer those and explain those on the basis that, you know, we were going to do the work in October and it sort of rained non-stop between September and March, so we haven't, or the contractor went bust, or aliens landed and you were prevented from doing the work, or whatever. So there should be something specific against a project plan. Then the other things will be provisional, which will set out a sort of illustrative or indicative timeline which we would intend to deliver against, but without having those specifics. So when we report the live schemes, we need to be doing those. The provisional schemes, it's a bit more, you know, this is what we like to do, but without necessarily having that commitment. So from a member perspective, you can have a look at those, and maybe the challenge is less about why I haven't delivered this, but more, this has been on the plan now for a number of years and you've not done anything, so you know, tell us why you're not taking it forward, which I suppose amounts to some of the same thing. But in terms of reporting and taking it forward, you know, that's what we're going to try and do, and that will be underpinned, or that is going to be underpinned by an internal officer process to make sure that if things are a live scheme, that, if we have got procurement in place, we have got a contract, we have got a cost, because at the moment, for all those things, that's not the case, and that manifests itself with some of the things you see here. So, whether things will necessarily improve, I hope they will, but for one thing, I should be sitting here in a few months' time finding it easy to at least explain what's gone off.
But it's not a now problem, is it? It's been a historical one we've had for years and years and years.
It's historical for us. I think it's very common across many, many councils struggling to deliver their capital plan. And I think it's probably become more difficult in recent years because the budgets that were put in place, which were sort of indicative outline, increasingly failed to reflect things like the price and cost inflation we all understand as we've experienced over the last sort of 18 months, 2 or 3 years.
And the grant?
Yes.
Oh, the grant.
Number 11.
This is right to buy, I think.
Yep.
So I don't think there's Peter and Katie would probably have known best actually. So I don't think there's a specific.
Still here.
Do you want to talk about right to buy at the right to buy?
Yeah, so
what we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are in the process of purchasing a fairly significant volume of properties at the moment. Can't go into the detail because it's a commercial nature and it's sensitive. I think in broad terms, we've got to spend $5 million over the next 5 years. If we don't spend it, then we have to give it back to government with interest. So there are plans in place to spend a fairly significant chunk of that over the next year and a half or so.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions on this? What can we recommend? Happy to recommend? Lovely. So if we then move on to his final
tonight. It was the work plan.
This is the work program. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just find the right bit. So work program's on page 101 on the numbers at the bottom, starts there. I think just to draw your attention to page 103, so there's some changes here. I think as Chair has been alluded to, September and November are very, very busy meetings, but maybe just particularly so we've got sort of social housing regulations, the fees and charges and car parking all sort of being added on there. The consumer standards and the annual self-assessment and social housing regulations, they're new and important, so I think it is key to pick those up going forward, so they'll be added. And then if we look at the overall work programme, I think you pages, I won't go through it, but you can see there's quite a lot on in September and November, and probably March as well, but it's too far ahead for me to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots going on in September and November, so I suppose the questions are, is there anything to add, but we've already understood the challenges there, or is there anything that maybe we're less interested in? I suspect the reality of it is we want to keep it all on there, and we'll just have to try and work our way through the agenda as quickly as we can, but it will be a challenge.
Sean, is there enough on there to potentially have an additional meeting rather than trying to cram everything in too quickly? So we're thorough on everything.
That's a popular idea, I imagine. I don't know. I need to defer to Democratic Services colleagues about the prospect of an extra meeting. I know timing. Just in all serious timing with other meetings and clashes, it can be quite challenging. So
yeah, it's a possibility, but I do know that Democracy Calendar is quite busy between September and December.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to put another meeting in, it could be quite difficult.
May I suggest that we go with the meeting schedule as it is now, but if we find that we've run out of time and we can't cover everything, then putting an extra meeting in there.
Between November and March seems to be a big gap, so maybe in the new year we would be able to slot one in, because I agree, I think we'd end up being told to rush through it.
There's no point in this committee we're going to skip over things. There's
no.
Well, we've got... I suggest let's run September and see how we get, and if I think that's a fair suggestion. If we want to cover this in more depth, we sort of close it down overly quickly and work out how to maybe how to carry it forward, and then maybe by September, the better we can, for the September meeting, we can think about some alternative dates between Christmas and New Year. I know just personally, there's quite a lot of budget meetings coming to play sort of between October and February, and it is quite a busy time of year. You know, my perception is it's always sort of autumn into the winter, they're sort of busy time of year from the Democratic Services standpoint. But yeah, we can have a look at that and see how it might fit. We can maybe come up with a couple of proposed dates in. So what something like January, February, and see if we can come with some dates.
We can always put stuff on there that you're not needed for.
Sorry?
We can always put stuff on there that you're not needed for if you're too busy.
Oh, well, if you change that to stuff I don't know anything about, that sort of thing.
Okay, any other comments on that? So we've got a way forward to busy meetings. In that case, the meeting is ended at 8 o'clock. Thank you very much.
Thank you. See you Thursday, Neil.
Thursday, yeah.